And we're holding on your Dalet Omid Bey's three lines from the bottom. We discussed yesterday the machlokas. We started discussing the question of who do the various mishnayos go like that describe the order of the avodas in the morning. Our mishnah had mentioned that the Kohen Gadol brings the during the 7 days before Yom Kippur brings the ketores and prepares the lamps of the menorah. On the other hand, the Masechta Tamid, it says the other way around. First they clean out the menorah, then they bring the ketores. So we started by giving an answer that there's Reb Shimon Ish HaMitzvah, and then there's the Chachamim. First, we thought that Reb Shimon Ish HaMitzvah is the Tana of Masechta Tamid, but we showed that not, because we showed that there's something that he says as far as the Tamid, which differs from the Mishnayos over there. So we said, okay, the Mishnayos here in Yuma are according to Reb Shimon Ish HaMitzvah, and then the ones in Tamid are according to the Chachamim. Then we said, though, that even within Yuma itself, we have in the next perek, it talks about the piosos, the gorolos that they made to determine which kohen does which avoda, and we had the menorah comes first and the ketores comes second, again, like it is in Tamid, but different than it is in our Mishnah. So we said that you have, when it comes to cleaning out and preparing and putting up wicks in the menorah, they did first five. Then they had a break with some other avoda, and then they did the other two for reasons that the Gemara is going to discuss later on. So now that got us into a discussion. In other words, the answer was Abaya was saying that our Mishnah, when it mentions the ketores and then the neiros, is talking about the last two neiros, whereas the other Mishnayos are talking about the first five neiros. So that implies, in other words, that you put ketores in between them, which would be according to the Chachamim. Whereas according to Abba Shoal, instead you put Dama Tomid between them, like we say every morning in Davin. So now let's analyze that machlokas, and then we're going to get back to how to reconcile the various Mishnayos. So my time at Abba Shoal. So why does Abba Shoal say that you put Dama Tomid, the sprinkling of the blood of the Tomid, between the five lamps and the two lamps of the menorah? So Dichtiv, because the pasuk says Baburka Baburka. And then according to him, ketores comes only afterwards. So dichtiv baburka baburka, the pasuk says every morning, behetivayas haneiros, when he prepares the lamps, then the pasuk continues, yakturena, so vahodo yakturena, only then does he offer the ketores. So implying, in other words, that it has to be that all of the hatovas haneiros takes place before the ketores. Virabonon, what are the Rabbonon answer to that? They say, my Kamar Achmana. They say, on the contrary, what does the Pasuk mean? Be'idan haktova tehe makta ketores. While the Hatova is going on, the ketores should already be booning on the Mizbeach Hazav, which of course means that they had to have started it before they finished the Hatova. So they would say, in other words, that you put ketores between them. In fact, Tosfos points out the Gemara could have just as well said, on the face of it, the Gemara could have just as well said that you say behetiveyas aneiros, which means the original five, and then yakturena. So then you see right from there that ketores goes in between. But Tosfos explains that based on a drasha later on in the third perek, then that wouldn't work. But in any case, we have, since it says behetiva yasaneiros yakturena. So again, Abba Shoal is taking that to mean that the ketores should be between according to him, it means you do all of the Hatovas Aneiros, and only then do you do Yakturena, do you burn the Ketores, whereas according to the Chachamim, it's exactly the other way around. It implies that while the Hatovas Aneiros is going on, while the last two are being prepared, you already have the Ketores burning on the Mizbeach. And they say that, the Eloi Temahachi, because if you were not going to say like that, then think of Ben Ha'abayim, what happens in the afternoon? Dichtiv of the pasuk continues of Ahalas Aaron as Haneres Ben Ha'abayim Yakturena. In the evening, when Aaron lights the lamps, then he should burn the ketores. Hochinami. The Chum would say to Abba Shoal, are you going to say by the same logic the Beresha Madlik Neres Vahodem Maktures Shabena Ha'abayim that first he's going to light the lamps of the menorah and only then he's going to burn the ketores? So, and obviously not, for reasons that the Gemara is going to go on to explain. So therefore, if in the evening, it can't mean candles than ketores, then therefore the Chachamim say in the morning, it also can't mean that. Just the opposite. It has to mean the ketores is burning when the candles are being done. So v'chitema hachinami. So you might say, sure. So you do the ketores in the afternoon after the hadlokas aneres. What's the problem? No. V'hatanya, we learn in a braisa, the pasuk says about the menorah me'erev ad boker, that it burns from evening till morning. So that means, so there's a two meanings of that. Number one of them is not so relevant to our sugya, but we're mentioning it over here. We're mentioning over here for completeness' sake. Ten lamidosa means you have to give each lamp the proper amount of oil. So it should burn all night from the evening until the morning, which the Gemara mentions elsewhere is a half. Rashi mentions it over here is a half a log for each lamp. The Chachamim figured out that a half a log is enough for each lamp, even for the longest winter nights during Tevis. And then during the rest of the year, they put in the same amount. And okay, if there's leftover oil in the morning, no big deal. So there'll be leftover oil. That's how Rashi learns it here and on the Pasuk and in various other places. On the other hand, Tosfos Yeshanim talks about, and we also learned about this in Shkalim, that maybe what it is they would make thicker wicks other times during the year. During the winter, when it's a long night, then they would make thinner wicks. So that way the half log of oil doesn't get used up overnight. During the rest of the year, we learned in Shkolim over there, there was a fellow named Ben Bevai who was in charge of Pukia, which according to the Yerushalmi meant that he was in charge of making wicks for the menorah, although we're going to see in our Masechta in the next parak another opinion what Pukia means. So his job would be to make, so according to that, his job would not only to be to make wicks for the Beis Mikdash in general, but to make the wicks exactly the right thickness and exactly the right size that every night the oil would get used up. That's according to Tosfos Yeshanim and some other Rishonim. Again, according to Rashi, it's not necessary. You just, you put in a half a log, you put in standard size wicks, and the rest of the year, if you have some oil left over, no big deal, as long as you have enough there to be able to last through the longest winter nights. Anyway, so that's one explanation of Me'erev Ad Boker, Dover Acher, and then another explanation. They're not usually Dover Acher, by the way, means that we have a second explanation that sort of contradicts the first one. Here, it's a different explanation that also the word Me'erev Ad Boker teaches us another detail. There's no other avoda that's kosher from evening till morning except this one. In other words, this has to be the light in the menorah, has to be the last avoda of the day. So Rashi mentions that the pasuk says that Yarech Oisoi Aaron Me'erev Ad Boker. So the Oisoi is a mute. Only it is Me'erev Ad Boker, nothing else. So necessarily in the afternoon, it has to mean that we light the menorah last. We do the ketores earlier, and then we do the menorah, and then we do the menorah last of all. So therefore, Ela Mai Ka'omer Achmana. So the Chachamim finish up. So obviously, what is the Torah saying in the evening? Be'idan Hadloka Tehei Mikta Torahs. In the evening, when you're lighting the menorah, already the Torahs should be burning. Hachanami Be'inin Atava Tehei Mikta Torahs. The same way over here. Then in the morning, it means that while you're doing the Hatava, the Torahs should already be burning. Therefore, the Chachamim say, you can't say, like you would want to say, Abba Shol, that the Ketores comes only after all the candles have been prepared, because then that wouldn't fit with the way it works in the evening. Therefore, it must mean that by the time you reach some of the candles of the menorah, the last two specifically, already then the Ketores is burning. So according to them, therefore, the order is five lamps, Hatova of five lamps, burning the Ketores, Hatova of two lamps. And that way, you're fulfilling what it says in the pasuk. Ve Abba Shol. So, what would Abba Shol answer to that? Amalach, he'll tell you, Shiny Hosim, Dichtiv Oisoi. Fine. When it comes to the Ketores Shabbein HaAbayim, you have no choice because it says Oisoi, and you have the miut, which we said means that the lamps of the menorah, that lighting the lamps has to be the last thing done in the day. Then there's no choice. You have to put Ketores before that. But in the morning, where you don't have any such line in the pasuk, then you can have Ketores afterwards, and you can understand that behetiveh aneres means first you prepare the candles and then yaktirena and then you burn the Ketores. So that explains Abba Shol's position. Okay. So now all of this, we got into this discussion by way of, again, we were trying to figure out why it is that in our Mishnah, it puts burning the Ketores before preparing the lamps as two things that the Kohen Gadol did during the week before Yom Kippur. Whereas in the next parak, we have Where it says in the next pedic, when it describes the piosos, it says first they had a pious for cleaning out the menorah, and only later on did they have a pious for ketores. So Abaya had given the answer that there's a difference between the five lamps and the two lamps. The five lamps takes place before ketores, according to the Chachamim. The two lamps takes place afterwards, and therefore that's how we reconcile the Mishnayos. So our Mishnah, therefore, would be talking only about the two lamps. Tosfos says that, in fact, maybe what it is the Kohen Gadol maybe didn't necessarily need to prepare all seven of them. On Yom Kippur itself, of course he needs to, because the whole avodah of Yom Kippur has to be done by the Kohen Gadol. But during the week before Yom Kippur, when he's doing it only to practice, maybe he didn't have to do all seven. Maybe it's enough if he does the last two. And then we said, so now that would work only according to the Chachamim. In fact, that answer would not work according to Abishol. So now comes a different answer. Rapapa, Amalai Kasha, Harabon, and Ha'Abishol. Very simple, Rapapa says. You could say, you don't need to talk about you don't need to say that our Mishnah is talking about the two lamps, and then one in the next parak is talking about the five lamps. You can say that our Mishnah, which mentions Torah's first, is according to the Chachamim. The one in the next parak, which mentions the Neiris first, is going according to Abishol. The problem, the Gemara says, "B'mayu kimto l'masnis in dahacha k'rabbanan." So what are you telling me? The Mishnah then in our perek, our Mishnah over here, is going according to the Chachamim, and then the Mishnah about the pious is going like Abishol, because it says the second pious included who is going to clean out the menorah, and the third pious was for Ketores. So you're going to say that our Mishnah is like the Chachamim, the next one is like Abishol, Ema Sefer, but look at the Sefer, meaning in the third perek. Now, usually you're not going to have Reisha and Sefer. It's not going to be a cross prakim. But here, where you have that the entire order, it's going through the Masechta is going through in order to describe the avodah of Yom Kippur. So therefore, we can call the entire description for the first through seven prakim. In effect, we can call it all one Mishnah. And therefore, we can talk about a Reisha and a Sefer. Like I said yesterday, also, there's the explanation that Doris Rishonim says that unlike most Masechtas of Mishnayos, these were the Yuma and some other ones that describe the order of how things were done in the Beis Mikdash seem to have been composed only after the Churban, which is why the Gemara mentioned before, for example, that Yuma can be attributed to Reb Shimon Ish HaMitzvah. So in other words, he would have sat down and composed the entire order of the Mishnayos of Yuma that describe the Seder Advarim, and therefore the Gemara can speak of it as a Reisha and a Sefer. So now, so Ema Sefer, so look at the next Mishnah later on in the third Perek, when it starts describing the actual Avodah of Yom Kippur, Hey Virulais HaTamid, they brought him the Korban Tamid, Krotzai, he would shecht it. Now Krotzai means that he would shecht it, but it means, as the Gemara is going to explain over there, as Rashi brings over here, he wouldn't actually shecht all the way through like a regular shechita. He would just cut through the majority of the two pipes, and then umerek acha shechita al yaday. Somebody else would complete the shechita after him, because the Kohen Gadol needed to also do the Kabbalah. He can't physically do the shechita, cutting through the entire two pipes and the jugular veins and all that, and still be able to receive all of the dama nefesh. Therefore, he would do the minimum that's required for it to be a valid shechita. Somebody else would finish it up so that a lot of blood will come out, and meanwhile, he's ready to do the Kabbalah. So, and then the Mishnah continues, Nichnas lahakteres haktoris. Then he would go into the Heichel to bring the ketoris or lahetivas haneris and to prepare the lamps of the menorah. So now, if you're telling me that whenever it says ketores and then neiros, like our Mishnah, means like the Chachamim, whereas according to Abishol, it would be the other way around, neiros first, then ketores, well then, reishav asan the Rabbanon, so that brings us back to the Rabbanon. So you're going to say reishav a sefer Rabbanon and mitziyasa Abishol. So what are you going to tell me? Within a whole continuum of Mishnayos, the first, second, and third prakim, we're going to say that the beginning, that the first part, our Mishnah, and the last part in Perek Gimel is according to the Rabbanon, or Mitziyasa Abishol, and the one in the middle in Perek Beis is going to be according to Abishol. Amalach Rapapa. So Rapapa will say, yeah, ain't Reshiva Sefer Rabbanon, Mitziyasa Abishol. Sure, I have no problem with that. We can say that, yes, the Mishnah is going back and forth between the opinions of the Chachamim and Abishol. Okay, so we have two answers why it is that in our Perek it mentions that in our Mishnah it says first Keturis and then Neiris, and the next Perek it says Neiris and then Keturis. We have a Abaye's answer that it's talking about two different sets of Neiris, the five versus the two, and we have Rapapa's that our Mishnah is according to the Chachamim, and the one in the next Perek is according to Abishol. So let's figure out why each one doesn't like the other one's answer. Bishlema Abaya like Omak Rapapa. I can understand why Abaya does not say like Rapapa, because Reisha Vesefer Abonon Matsyasa Abashol like Mutumla. He doesn't want to shell in that our Mishnah and the one in the third Perek should be according to the Chachamim, and between them is a Mishnah like Abashol. He doesn't think that that makes sense. Ela Rapapa, my time, like Omak Abaya. But why doesn't Rapapa accept Abaya's explanation? That we're talking about two different sets of lamps of the menorah. What forces him to say that we're putting in a Mishnah like Abba Shol in the middle? The answer is Amalach. The answer is Rapapa will answer you. If you're going to say that it's talking about two different sets, the two and the five, then you have a problem. We know that the five came first. Tana Beresha Atavas Shteineres V'Hodor Atavas Chamashneres. Are you going to say then that first the Mishnah is talking about, and our Mishnah is talking about the Hatava of the two lamps, and then only later on in the next Perek does it talk about the Hatava of the five lamps, and therefore it puts it before Keturis? Doesn't make sense. The five came before the two. So therefore, it would be better to assume that the Mishnayos are telling us what's going on in chronological order. First five, then two, which is how it was. And we're going to learn in the third Perek on Daf Lamed Gimel, we're going to go through the whole Abaye Hav Masader, and we're going to explain over there why it is they did it that way. But in any case, the point is that Rapapa is saying, so it's not logical to say that our Mishnah is referring to the two. It must be that our Mishnah is referring to the five, and the one in the next Perek is also referring to the five. And the only way to make that work would be, the next Perek is talking about the two, as the case may be. And therefore, the only way to say would be that this one is according to the Chachamim, and that one would be according to Abba Shol. Ve'abaya amalach, what would Abaya answer to you? He would say, that's not a problem. The Mishnah is just telling us the Mishnah, when the Mishnah says over here, our Mishnah, when it says that he's Makduk Turtus and Mativ Natus, the Mishnah is not coming to tell us the Mishnah is not coming to tell us the order of things. The Mishnah is just informing us that the Kohen Gadol needs to be practicing the Avodah during the 7 days. Later on in the Masechta, it's going to be talking about the exact order of how things were done. So forget about our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is not telling us the order of things. It's just telling us in a general way that the Kohen Gadol would do these avodas during the 7 days before Yom Kippur. Then when we started Perek Beis, when we start dealing with the actual order of the avodas every day and the avodas on Yom Kippur, then we mention first the five neiris in Perek Beis and we put the keturis after them. And then in Perek Gimel, we mention the neiris and then the keturis, meaning the remaining two. So the fact that our Mishnah mentions them out of order is no big deal, because our Mishnah is not coming to tell us the order in the first place. Our Mishnah is just coming to tell us in a general way what the Kohen Gadol did during these 7 days. And Tosfos learns a little differently, that Aruya Komodile means, again, since the Kohen Gadol is doing it only for practice, he doesn't have to do all seven, he just has to do two of them. So therefore, it's good enough for our Mishnah to be saying that he brings the Keturis and then the Neiris, which would be according to the Chachamim, that he brings the Keturis and then he does the remaining two. So again, in other words, according to that, somebody else would be doing the first five. The Kohen Gadol doesn't need to practice that, says Abaya. He just needs to bring the Keturis and then bring the other two in order to practice. Then in the next Perek, when it's describing how they would make a pious and how the regular Kohenim would do the Avodah every other day of the year, then it mentions the five first, because in fact the Kohen who won the pious to clean out the menorah would in fact do the five, and then there would be some other Avodah, and then they'd come back and do the two. So according to Abaya, then it's not a problem that it so Abaya says, I don't have a problem with this, that it has two and then five. So again, according to Rashi, because our Mishnah is not really coming to tell us the order of things anyway. And according to Tosfos, because in fact, the Kohen Gadol would only do two lamps, he wouldn't do the other five. Okay. So now that we dealt with that contradiction between the Mishnayos here in Yuma, now let's get back to, so we started the sugya by saying that there's a Mishnah in Masechta Tamid that also mentions the that also mentions the Neiris and then the Keteris. So we answered that, so we want, so Rav Huna wanted to answer that the author of the Mishnayos in Masechta Tamid is Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah. And then the author of the Mishnayos here in Yuma is some other Tana, and therefore they're arguing. But we said that doesn't work because in Masechta Tamid, when it describes the sprinkling of the blood of the Korban Tamid, it says that they would just do the sprinkling, they would apply the blood to the Mizbeach the same as any other Korban Ola, Shtayim Shein Arba, go to one corner and sprinkle and dash the blood from the Keli against the corner, so it goes onto the two sides, and then go to the opposite corner of the Mizbeach and do the same thing. So you have Shtayim Shein Arba, but so that's the Mishnah in Tamid says that. But Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah says in a Braisa that no, what you do with the Korban Tamid, different than every other Oila, is you go to one corner and you do the one application, you do the one application that goes on two corners, fine. But then he says you go to the other corner and instead of doing one splash that goes on the two sides, he says you do one splash on one side and one on the other side. So in effect, according to Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah, you're doing three splashes of blood of the Korban Tamid. So now we have to figure out why. Gufa. So getting back to what we said before, Bala l'kayin mizrachis tzfainis, we said that the Kohen comes to the northeastern corner of the Mizbeach, noisin mizrachis tzfainis, and he splashes the blood on the northeastern corner. So some of it goes on the north, and some of it goes on the east, and some of it on the north. Ma'arabis dromis, noisin ma'arabis dromis. Then he goes to the southwest corner and also splashes it against the wall of the Mizbeach. So some goes on the west and some on the south. The Tony Allah, and we learn a brice on it, Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah, Mashana B'Tamid. Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah says, no, it's different with the Korban Tamid. He says, the first part, I agree with the Tanakhama. Bala l'ken mizrachis tzfodis, nosin mizrachis tzfodis. He goes to the northeast corner and splashes it. So you have some on the north, some on the east. But then he says, ma'arabis dromis. Then he goes to the southwest corner. And then he doesn't just do one application. Nosin ma'arav avachakach nosin dromis. First he does on the west side. Then he does on the south side. So according to him, you have three splashes. So my time is Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah. So why does Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah say such a thing? So Rabbi Yechanan said, in the name of one of the Chachamim from the yeshiva of Rabbi Yanai, so I guess he heard it from one of the Chachamim and didn't remember which one, or maybe the one called out and he didn't know who it was, whatever. Anyway, Amakra, the Pasuk says, now the context of the Pasuk is talking about the Chatas of Rosh Chodesh, and specifically the Chatas. But the Gemara is going to darshan that it's teaching us something about the Tamid as well. The Pasuk says, one goat you bring on Rosh Chodesh as a Chatas for Hashem, al oilas haTamid ye'ose on, or in addition to, the oila of the Tamid, it should be done, v'niskoi, together with its nesachim. So in other words, he doubtions the fact that it says lachatas lashem, and then it continues al olas atomid. So he says we doubtion from that there's a certain degree of the procedure of a chatas that is done to the olas atomid. So now, in other words, olahi, fundamentally the korban tamid is an ola. But the Torah is telling us treat it like a certain degree like a chatas. L'chatas l'Hashem al oilas ha-tamid. So therefore, in other words, so according to Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah, you're making a slight change to the avodah of the oilas ha-tamid in order to make it slightly like a chatas. So what? How do you accomplish that? First, he starts by doing one application which goes on two sides in his beach. So far, that's doing like an oila. Then he goes to the opposite corner. Then he goes to the opposite corner and does two separate applications like you would do with a chatas. Now, of course, it's not completely like a chatas because in particular, with a chatas, the Kohen actually dips his finger into the blood and daubs it on the corners of the Mizbeach. Here, he's not doing that. Even if Shimon Isha Mitzvah agrees that he's splashing the blood out, he's dashing the blood out of the container, out of the Keli, out of the Mizrach, onto the wall of the Mizbeach. Nevertheless, he says that since the Pasuk is saying there has to be something slightly like a chatos, then you make that distinction where you make that slight distinction whereby a chatos you put separately on each side, and the same way here by the Tamid, you put separately on each of two sides. Okay, so the Gemara asks, if you're telling me that you need to make a change in the order of the, if you're telling me the Pasuk is implying that you need to do something different with the Oila, with the Tamid, to make it like a Chatas, how do you know it means you change the within the Avoida of the Oila itself? Maybe it means, V'litid shtayim shein arba k'maisa Oila, v'arba shein arba k'maisa Chatas. Maybe the Pasuk is implying that you do the shtayim shein arba like you usually do. But then, in addition, to do it like a chatas, in addition, then the kohen takes his finger and dips it in and goes around and daubs it on the four corners. So how do you know it doesn't mean that? The answer is can't. Loy matzinu domim shemachaprin v'chozirin v'chaprin. We never find that you have a korban where you need to do one set of application of blood to do the kapara, and then you're going to be doing another kapara. Now, you have, when it comes to the chatois apnimius, when it comes to the chatois of Yom Kippur, obviously we're going to have later on in the Masechta, there are many applications of blood of those, but with those, matona achas mehen me'akavas, with those, we have the rule that we say in Ezra Mekarman that if you miss out one matana, then it's ma'ak of the whole thing. So in effect, all of those are one long kapara. But here, where you have that you would need shtayim shein arba, which is the normal amount for an oila, and then on top of it, to say that you're required to do another kapara with the blood, like a chatas, we never find such a thing. So therefore, we can't say that that's what the Pasuk is implying. We have to say the Pasuk is implying you have to do something like a chatas, but it should be a very minor change, not something where you're doing a whole different kind of avoda that you would never find anywhere else. Okay, the Gemara asks, so what? No, and you also don't find any korban where you do it half like a chatas and half like an oila. You have to say, well, the fact of the matter is the Pasuk is making a hekesh, and therefore Reb Shimon Isha Mitzvah says you have no choice, you have to do it that way. Well then, so why can't we say the same thing? Once the Pasuk is giving us the hekesh, how do we know that it means that you change half of the avoida of the korban? Maybe it means that, yes, usually you don't have damim shemachaprin v'chozirin machaprin. You usually don't have where you do one set of applications and then a whole different set of applications with the same blood. But over here, obviously, you have no choice. Given that the Torah is telling you it has to be somehow like a chatas, then we should say equally well, instead of changing the matonis of the existing matonis and making one of them to be on separate on two sides instead of on the two sides together, maybe it does mean after all that you have a whole separate set of matonis. The answer is hosab pisik matonis ba'almahi. The answer is that what Shimon Isha Mitzvah is telling us to do is only dividing one matona in half. It's not so blatantly like a chatas. Yes, you have the Torah is telling you to do something like a semblance of a chatas, but you want to do something which is not blatantly, like completely different than all other korbanos. So over here, all you have is the fact of the matter is, afterwards, if you go by the Mizbeach, you are going to see blood splashed on the two sides, on the east, on the west and on the south. The only difference is, according to Reb Shimon Isha Mitzvah, you did those as two separate splashes rather than as one splash, like the Tanakhama says. That's not a big enough difference for it to be blatantly that you did it like a different korban. So therefore, in other words, if we're going to assume, it's sort of like tafasta merubah lo tafasta. If the Torah is telling us that there's going to be some difference, we're going to assume that that difference is as minor as possible. It's going to be there, but it's going to be as minor as possible. So therefore, you're not going to have a big change. You're still going to have, in the end, blood was put only in the regular places where it goes for any other oila. The only difference is that in this case, it was done on one of the corners as two splashes rather than one. Okay. The Gemara asks, and still, we have another way maybe of doing it. V'nesiv achas shishtayim lamata k'maisa oila. Maybe the Pasuk is implying there's another difference we know between an oila and a chatas. The blood of an oila and most other korbanos goes on the lower half of the mizbeach, below the chuta sikra. The blood of a chatas goes on the top half of the mizbeach, above the chuta sikra. So maybe the native achas shishtayim lamata k'maisa oila. Maybe what you need is one application on one corner, which goes then on the two sides, which on the bottom half of the mizbeach, like you do with an oila, and then shtayim shem shtayim lamayla k'maisa chatas. Maybe with a Shimon Isha Mitzvah's two applications should be done on the other corner, should be done not on the bottom half of of the Mizbeach, like usual for an Ola. Maybe the Pasuk is implying they should be done on the top half of the Mizbeach, like a Chatas. The answer is still, we have to look at precedent with other korbanos. We don't ever find by any korban, by any other korban, where you have some blood applied to the top half of the mizbeach and some to the bottom half. It's always either one or the other. So the same thing over here. We have to assume that it's either one or the other. And since we're not going to say that all of it goes on the top half, because it is, after all, fundamentally an ola, therefore we're going to say necessarily all of it has to go on the bottom half. The Gemara says, Veloy, you're telling me that not? I can find you an example where blood goes half on the top, half on the bottom. Later on in the Masechta, when we talk about the sprinklings of blood that the Kohen Gadol does in the Heichal, of the blood of the par and the sire, the Pasuk says, Hizamenu achas l'mayla v'sheva l'mata. He sprinkles it one above and seven below, kimatzlif. Achas l'mayla v'sheva l'mata. So the question is, so on the face, now there we're talking about where he does the seven sprinklings in front of the kapodas. Now, Bapashtus, when we say lamaila and lamata, means lamaila would be that he makes sure that the blood goes on the upper half of the kapodas, and lamata would mean that he makes sure it goes on the lower half. So that would show that therefore that you do have blood where you do have the same series of applications of blood where some of it is lamaila and some of it is lamata. The Gemara says, no, that's not what the Mishnah means. The Mishnah itself continues, kematzlif. At the lamaila and lamata is kematzlif, like somebody who whips. So my kematzlif, machve Rabbi Yehuda, kiminagad. It means like a shliach based in that's whipping somebody, where Rashi describes each time when he hits with the whip, he's hitting in a different place. So therefore, in other words, so lamaila and lamata would be not that some of them go on the upper half of the kapodas or in front of the upper half of the kapodas and some on or in front of the lower half. What it means is achas l'mayla would mean one goes further away from him, and then sheva l'mata would be closer and closer to him. So you'd end up with a row of spots of blood on the parechas or on the floor in front of the parechas or in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, as the case may be. But not that it's because, in other words, like a shliach based in, every time he's whipping the person, he makes sure the whip hits in a different place. Tosfos Hashanim says differently. I mean, where do you ever find when a person is when a shliach based in is giving malchus that he does that? L'chora, we find that you hit the person between his shoulder blades and on his front or whatever, but you don't specifically find that he makes a point of each time should be in a different place. So therefore, Tosfos Hashanim explains that lamaila and lamata means lamaila would mean that his hand is facing up, and lamata would mean that his hand is facing down. But again, there's no particular effort to make sure that the blood goes on the top half or in front of the top half of the kapodas or the bottom half. All of them are landing on the floor or on the parechas or whatever. So all it is just a difference of how he's turning his hand. So kiminagadna, like a person who gives malchus, where sometimes he turns his hand upward and sometimes he turns his hand downward. Tosfos over here brings from the Aruch also. That said, in fact, you have to wonder what was the Makshan thinking? He knew that the Mishnah says the word kematzlif. So in other words, the vort is, Tosfos says, the Makshan thought, yes, he knew that the Mishnah says the word kematzlif, but he thought that it meant still that they're all in one place. So that some of them are on the top half, some of them are on the bottom half. He thought that it meant that kematzlif means he lifts up his hand, but he doesn't hit yet. He only hits when he's bringing his hand downward. So the Makshan thought that that's what it means over here, but nevertheless, that some of it goes lamaila and lamata in terms of the kapodas, and we're saying that's not what it means. So you still don't have where you have dumim that are half lamaila and half lamata. Therefore, we're justified in saying that when it comes to the kohen Tumid also, we're not going to say that we make it a little bit like a chatas in putting some of the blood on the top half of the mizbeach. Okay, it's still, the Gemara says, Veloy, still you're telling me not. I'll give you another example where we have blood on the top half and on the bottom half. The Mishnah continues over there, Bahatnan. He's a mimenu al tahore shem mizbeach sheva pomim. Afterwards, later on, after the Kohen Gadol has finished the sprinklings in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and in front of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he goes to the mizbeach hazav. And he sprinkles from the, he mixes the blood of the pirate and the sir. Actually, we're going to have machlokas later on in the Masechta whether he mixes them at this point, but whatever. Anyway, he applies the blood on Tohore Shamizbeach, on the Tohore the Mizbeach Sheva Pamim, seven times. Now, what does Tohore Shamizbeach mean? My love, Apauge de Mizbeach. L'chorda, that means that he's doing it on the midpoint of the height of the Mizbeach. In other words, the Mizbeach HaZahav, the Torah tells us, was 2 amas tall. So he applies the blood about an amma off the floor. Now, there's inevitably, if he's doing it on the side of the Mizbeach over there, some of it is going to be on the top half, and some of it is going to be on the bottom half. Yef Shalat Samson. So therefore, inevitably, some is going to be on top and some on bottom, and you see there's no problem with it. Or Tosfos learns differently. What it means is, first, the Mishnah tells us that he applies blood to the four corners of the Mizbeach HaZahav, which are on the top half. Later on, we're saying now he goes and applies to the side, which would be the bottom half. So therefore, so you see again that you have on the top and the bottom half. So that and how would Tohore Shamizbeach mean the midpoint of the height of the Mizbeach? Kida Amri Inchi Tohar Tira. Like people say it's noontime. Tira means the middle of the day. So therefore, in other words, Tohore Shamizbeach would be the noontime, so to speak, like the midpoint of the Mizbeach. And then so there you have Domim that are chetzin l'mayla v'chetzin l'mata. The answer is no. So Tara Tira, who pauga diyama, which is the midpoint of the day. Amar Rav Bashila loy. No, so Rav Bashila says that's not what the word Atore Shemizbeach means. It means agufei de Mizbeach. It means that he sprinkles the blood on the top of the Mizbeach, on the top surface of the Mizbeach, on the actual body of the Mizbeach. In other words, he cleans off an area where you had the ashes and the burnt remnants of Ketores. He clears that aside and has an empty space there on the top of the Mizbeach, which he sprinkles the blood onto. As you find the pasuk by Matan Torah, and they saw like the essence of the heavens as far as purity. So we see that the word Tohore Shamizbeach also means that it's pure, that it's clean of anything else. So that's what it means. It doesn't mean that he did it on the side of the Mizbeach. It means he did it on the top of the Mizbeach. So there you go then. So you have blood, in that case, is being applied only to the top of the Mizbeach, only to the top of the Mizbeach Hazav, first to the corners, then to the top. So therefore, so you don't have Domim that are half Lamaila and half Lamata. So therefore, we can say that when it comes to the Oila, when it comes to the Tumid also, there's no reason to be saying that some of the blood should be on the top half and some should be on the bottom half. We have to say it does all go on the bottom half. What do we do with Reb Shimon Ish HaMitzvah's Drasha? We say that we make it slightly like a Chatas in that we divide one of the Matonis on the bottom into two and do it as two separate splashes instead of as one. Okay, so now let's go through some other details of Reb Shimon Ish HaMitzvah's opinion. Why, according to Reb Shimon Ish HaMitzvah, if we have to do matonis that are like a regular oila, and we also have to do matonis that are reminiscent of a chatas, why do we do it in that order? Why do we do first the oila ones and then the ones that are similar to a chatas? Nesiv bereisha de chatas v'hadar nesiv de oila. First, we should do the ones that are similar to a chatas, namely do the two separate ones first, according to him, and then do the two, and then do the one splash, which is like an oila, which goes on the two sides. The answer is, the Gemara says, "Kiven to Oila, he called him a Bereisha." The fact of the matter is, the Tumid is an Oila, it's not a Chatas. So therefore, if we're going to be doing two separate kinds of Avodas, then logically, we're going to be doing the one that's similar to an Oila, that the one that's done like a regular Oila first, and then at the end, we're going to do a different one, which is reminiscent of a Chatas. Okay. Now, the next question is going to be more generally, not just on Reb Shimon Ish HaMitzvah, but on the Chachamim as well. We said that even both the Chachamim and Reb Shimon Ish HaMitzvah agree what corners we splash the blood on. They're arguing how many splashes we do, but they both agree that it's the north. They both agree that it's the northeast corner and the southwest corner. So first of all, why is he doing Davka northeast and southwest? We know it has to find. It has to be two opposite corners, so the blood goes on all four sides of the Mizbeach. But Nesiv Dremis Mizrachis Vahadra Tzfonis Ma'arovis, why can't he do southeast and northwest? Hagoyis Agro, by the way, takes out the word Vahadr, because Vahadr would mean and then. Here the Gemara is not yet concerned about the order of the... here the Gemara is not necessarily concerned about the order of the matonis yet. It's just why dafka those two corners. On the other hand, on the other hand, Tosfos talks about over here that maybe what it is that the fact is now he's doing it as an oila, and an oila he's walking around on the floor. He doesn't need the kevesh of the mizbeach. Nevertheless, since the kevesh is on the south side, we consider that sort of the entrance to the mizbeach. So therefore, Tosfos says that what the Gemara is arguing is yes, it should be in that order. As soon as he's next to the kevesh, therefore the southeast corner is right there, so he should be doing that. Then he should be going to the northwest corner and doing that. So in that case, the word v'hodr would be justified. Whatever, the question is, why dafka the two corners that we said, northeast and southwest, rather than southeast and northwest? So the reason is, Amri, so they answered, because oila ta'una yisoid. When you sprinkle the blood of the oila on the mizbeach, it has to be above a corner that has a yisoid. The southeast corner did not have a yisoid. We learned the other day that the Mizbeach was built in the territory of Binyamin and that the territory of Yehuda jutted out, stuck out into the territory of Binyamin a little bit. In that area where it stuck out, there was no yisoid. Actually, the Gemara in Zvachim brings an opinion that there was a physical yisoid there, but it didn't have the din of a yisoid. Whatever the case, the point is, now that corner, the southeast corner, did not have a yisoid. You have different. There's a few different opinions of the. Rishonim how exactly it looked. Is it that we know the yisoid definitely went around two full sides of the mizbeach, this north side and the west side? So then, what is it? Is it that it stuck out an amma away from the mizbeach at those two corners where it ended, and then therefore, so the entire south side and the entire east side does not have a yisoid, or is it some Rishonim learn that the yisoid did wrap around the corner on the it did wrap around the northeast and southwest corners, but then it stopped there an amma after the corner, and then the whole rest of the south side and the whole rest of the east side doesn't have a yisoid. A third way that some Rishonim explain is the yisoid did go along the whole south side and the whole east side, but it stopped before the corner. So according to all opinions, there was no yisoid in that corner of the mizbeach. So therefore, the southeast corner is out as a place to splash the blood of the oila because there's no yisoid underneath it. And once the southwest is out, once the southeast can't be used, then neither can the northwest because we know it has to be two opposite corners. So therefore, that leaves us with the northeast and the southwest. Okay. The next question, again, also according to the Chachamim, why is he first doing the northeastern corner and then going and doing the southwest corner? Why doesn't he do it the other way around? First southwest, then northeast. Now, why should he? On the face of it, it's an oila. He's shechting it on the north side of the Azara. Why should the Gemara be assuming that he starts with the south side? Tosfos explains, we can say, again, we are still talking over here primarily according to Rav Shimon Ish HaMitzvah. There are different opinions what part of the Azara is considered the northern half. In particular, you have a machloikas in a few places in Shas where the Mizbeach was located inside the Azara. Was it more towards the north side? Was it more towards the south side? Was it exactly in the middle? And we're actually going to have later on in the Masechta that Rav Shimon Ish HaMitzvah itself, that everything up to the midpoint of the door of the Heichel can be considered, of the Olam, can be considered the north. Therefore, you do actually have, you're not necessarily having to shecht the Korban Tamid. You're not necessarily having to shecht it on the north side of the Mizbeach. You could be shechting it more on the northeastern side of the Mizbeach, sort of. And therefore, when you go, so now the corner that you're near, the northwestern corner, we said is out because you can't do the sprinkling on it because the corner opposite it doesn't have a yisoid. Therefore, the more logical thing, if you keep on walking straight, you're going to reach the southwest corner first. So therefore, maybe you should be doing that one first. So the answer is no. Kivin de Omamar, since we learn in a Braisa, Kol pinus shata pona lo yu ela derech yamin lemizrach. Whenever you turn, you should always be turning towards the right, going to the east. Meaning, in other words, for example, when the Kohen goes up the kevesh of the Mizbeach, now in this case, he's not going up the kevesh, he's standing on the floor, but still the same principle applies. When he's going up the kevesh, you always have him turning to his right. He's always going to be, as he's going around the Soviv, we say in morning davening, all about kevesh ufana la Soviv, and then he comes, he starts going towards his right. So it comes out, he's going counterclockwise around the Mizbeach. And the first corner that he reaches is the southeast corner. But again, now when it comes to a chatas, fine. He applies the blood to the southeast corner and then he continues his way around. When it comes to the oila, it's true that he's not going up the kevesh, but the same principle applies that you have him start with the first corner that he reached, the first available corner as he's walking around the Mizbeach, beginning, so to speak, from the entrance of the Mizbeach, which is the side with the ramp, which is the south side. Then the first corner that he reaches is going to be the northeastern corner as he's walking towards his right around the Mizbeach. The first one he's going to reach after the southeastern corner, where we said he can't put the blood over there because it's on the east side, the next corner that he's going to reach going in that direction counterclockwise is going to be the northeastern corner, and therefore that's where he does the blood first. Rashi points out, by the way, there's no need to say the word liyamin in our Gemara over here. What it is in the original Gemara in Zvachim that discusses this idea of kol pinus shata pona, the context is over there that it's talking about that. It doesn't have to say the word lemizrach in our Gemara. The context over there is talking about how we know that the ramp of the Mizbeach was on the south side, because that's the only way to make it work, that when you're going kol pinus shata pona lo yu ela liyamin, that you're always turning towards your right, and you're going counterclockwise, that the first side you're going to reach is going to be the east. The only way that works is if the kevesh is on the south. But in all other places where the Gemara mentions this point, it adds the word lemizrach, even though, for example, in our Gemara, it's not necessary to say it. Where we learn this from, that kol pinus shata pona, we learn it from, the Gemara explains, we learn it from the description of the Yam Shol Shloimeh. The Pasuk tells us that Shloimeh made a big copper tank, which they use as a mikveh for the Kohenim. And the Pasuk describes it stood on top of 12 copper images of oxen. And the Pasuk mentions that three of them facing in each direction. And the Pasuk mentions the directions like that in a counterclockwise direction. Shlosh Aponim Tzafona, Shlosh Aponim Yama, etc. So if we look at the order of the directions that it says over there, we find that's counterclockwise. So therefore, you learn from that that when you're going around, then you go counterclockwise. You go liyamin. You go to the right. There are certain things that we do nowadays that are reminiscent of that. Also, for example, when we go when you bring the Sefer Torah to the Bima, so you go the long way around. But if you have two ways that are equally the same, then you go to the right. And similarly, when an Oyla is coming up and when he's leaving, so you have a few places where we do follow this thing of going Derech Yamin when possible. Another example of it actually is when we light the menorah, where we start lighting every night on the left and go towards the right. That's another example of going liyamin. Okay, so anyway, the bottom line is, again, so the Kohen needs to go counterclockwise around the Mizbeach, and therefore that requires, as Rashi says, okay, he's not going up the Kevesh in this case, but still, if we consider that he starts from the entrance to the Mizbeach, which is where the Kevesh is, then if he's going counterclockwise, then the first corner that he reaches is the northeast corner, and therefore that's the first one where he applies the blood. Okay, one last question. Going back to the Shimon Ish HaMitzvah's opinion, now what do we say? The Shimon Ish HaMitzvah is darshaning from the Pasuk that it says about the Chatas of Rosh Chodesh, that we take a din of the Chatas and apply it to the Oila. How do we know it's that? Maybe it's the other way around. How do we know that the Torah is telling us that with an Ola, do something like you do with the Chatas? Maybe it's the other way around. Maybe it's the other way around. The Torah is telling us when it comes to a chatas, maybe let's say the chatas of Rosh Chodesh, the Torah is telling us do with it to a certain extent, like an oila, do something different with its avoda, like an oila. The answer is lois sakudai. You can't think that way. The pasuk says on, in addition to the oila satomid, it should be done, and it's nesach. My kamar nachmana means what is the pasuk saying? Midi de chatas shodi ha'oila. Take something of the procedure of the chatas and apply it to the oila. Al oila satomen, in other words, on, in addition to the usual avoida of the oila, add something that you would do usually for a chatas. So therefore, that's what the pasuk means, according to the Shimon HaMitzvah, that you do the oila of the Tomid, like a usual oila, but you do one thing different, you do it like a chatas. Now, halacha is not like the Shimon HaMitzvah, the Rambam paskens, like the Chachamim, that you just do the application of the blood of the Tomid the same as every other oila. Okay. Now the Gemara is going to start a new discussion, which is not really directly connected to Masechta Yoma, but the structure of this sugya is going to be similar to the previous one. Previously, we started with that we had a Mishnah in Masechta Yoma that seems to contradict the Mishnah in Masechta Tamid, and we started by answering that the Mishnah in Tamid is according to one particular Tana. First, we thought it was a Shimon HaMitzvah, then we said just the opposite. The one in Yoma is according to the Shimon HaMitzvah, and the one in the other place is according to another Tana. So now Rashi points out that kind of thing is a very unusual sugya in the Gemara, that it should talk like that, that you have one Masechta contradicts a different Masechta, and we need to reconcile them. Individual Mishnah is true. We have all the time. The Gemara will say, Uriminhu, I have a contradiction, another Mishnah says such and such. But to talk about that one Masechta contradicts another, and we need to say that one Masechta is according to one Tana and the other is according to another Tana, is a very rare thing. Because like we discussed before, these Masechtas that we're dealing with over here, Yuma and Tomid and Midas, and those were all composed after the Churban by particular known Tanoim, and therefore the Gemara can be discussing such things. So now, in a similar vein, we're going to be pointing out a contradiction between something in Masechta Tomid and something in Masechta Yoma. Something between Tomid and between Midos. And we're going to answer it in the same way that they're according to different Tanoim. So Tnanahos, and we learn in a Mishnah in Tomid, Omalaham HaMamuna, the Mamuna, the one in charge, tells them, Rashi says the Mamuna is the Skan. Tosfos says not necessarily. The Skan had other responsibilities. This wasn't necessarily one of them. The Tosfos Hashanim points out, I mean, there's plenty of other mamunim available in the Beis Mikdash, so it didn't necessarily have to be the Skan. Anyway, he tells them, Tzuva alviu tle milishkas beis atloim, go bring a sheep from the lishka where they keep the sheep. They had a chamber in the Beis Mikdash where they had sheep that they had pre-checked. They had to check them for at least 4 days for mumim before they bring them as a korban. And the Mishnah in Erechin tells us that they always had at least 6 sheep in there that were checked. So go bring a sheep from there. And the Mishnah describes, where is that lishka? The lishka satloim is in the northwestern corner. The northwestern corner of what? There were 4 chambers over there. There was a large chamber in the Mishmechdash called the lishka, called the Beis Hamoked. It's called the Beis Hamoked because they had a fire burning there all the time. Rashi explains the purpose of the fire was mainly for the Kohanim to warm themselves up by, because after all, they're walking barefoot on a marble floor. So there was a main room over there where you had a fire. And then, as the Mishnah is going to go on to say, there were 4 small rooms opening up into it. Inside the building, there were 4 smaller rooms opening up into it. According to Tosfos, the primary purpose of the fire was really more in order to relight the fire of the Mizbeach. In case the fire on the Mizbeach went out, then they would relight it from the fire of the Beis HaMoked. So there were 4 chambers in there. Achas lishkas atloyim. One was the chamber of the sheep, which we just said they would bring a sheep from there for the korban tamid. Va'achas lishkas achesomos. The second one was the chamber of the stamps, which we learned in Shkolim that they had a system of stamps and vouchers that when a person needed nesachim for their korban, instead of them bringing their own flour and wine and oil, where you don't know if those were made in conditions of tara, they have to be made al taras hakodesh. Instead, you would go and pay money to one of the officials of the Beis Hamikdash named Yochanan, and he would give you a stamp, a stamped piece of paper or parchment or whatever. You would take it to another official over there named Achia, and he would give you, he would take the voucher and give you the Nesachim. So there was a chamber. So there was a chamber for the Chaisamos. So that was one of the chamber, that was one of the smaller chambers in the Beis Hamikdash. The Achas Lishkas Beis Hamikdash. The third one was the chamber where they had the fire. Which what it means is either it means that the actual fire that they had in the building was actually in there, or it means to Tosfos brings from Ben Hananel that there were two fires in there, one to warm up the Kohenim and the other one to relight the Mizbeach, the fire on the Mizbeach if necessary. In particular, there's the explanation that If you could have a case where Kohen has to go and Tovel, where, for example, he became a Balkeri while he was on duty guarding in the Beis Hamikdash, so then he would go and Tovel in a mikveh underground underneath the Beis Hamikdash, and then he would go warm up by this fire. So that was the third one. Va'achas lishka sha'osin b'lechem aponim, and the fourth one is the chamber where they would make the lechem aponim. Now, so that's the Mishnah in Tomid. But then, Uraminu, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. Because the Mishnah in Midas describes those chambers differently. Arba l'shachas hoi l'beis ha-moked. It says the Beis ha-moked had four chambers. Kikatonius tapsuchas the traklin. They were like small chambers that open up into a large hall. In other words, you shouldn't think. In other words, that these were like separate outbuildings that just had a door into the Beis ha-moked. They were actually part of the structure of the Beis ha-moked, and they were just like side rooms that open into it. Shtayim b'kodesh or shtayim b'chol. Two of them were in the kodesh part of the Beis Hamikdash. Two were in the chol part because the Beis Hamikdash was on the line. It was half inside the Azara and half outside it. V'roshe pispis in mavdilin min kodesh l'chol. And there were the ends of wooden beams as a marker between the part that's kodesh and the part that's chol. Because, for example, in the part that's chol, you could sit; in the part that's kodesh, you couldn't. So there were wooden beams sticking out of the wall or out of the floor or whatever to show which is which. And what do these chambers serve for? So unlike in Tomid, where it doesn't list what direction each one was in, it just lists the four of them. Here in Midas, it lists the directions that each one was in, and we're going to see that there seems to be a contradiction where the Lishkas Hatloim was. Again, in the Mishnah in Tomid, we said the Lishkas Hatloim was in the northwestern corner, but the Mishnah in Midas says, Ma'arovis Dremis, the southwestern one, he has a Lishkas Tlei Korban. That was the Lishka where they kept the sheep for the Korban. Dremis Mizrachis, the northeastern one, the southeastern one, he Lishka Shoyoisin Balacham upon him. That was the one where they made the Lacham upon him. Mizrachis Tzvonis, and next one is the northeastern one. Bog Gonzo Beis Chashmenoi Abnim is Beach Shishik to Malcha Yavon. They are the Chashmenoim stored away, put in Gniza, the stones of the Mizbeach, which the kings of Yavon, the kings of Greece, had defiled. They brought Korbanos Tabor Zara on the Mizbeach. So the Gemara explains in Avodah Zarah that the Chashmonaim weren't sure what to do with those stones. We can't recut them and use them for the Mizbeach again, because the stones for the Mizbeach can't be made out of, they can't be cut. They have to be natural whole stones. They couldn't use them for the Mizbeach, obviously, because it had been used for Avodah Zarah. They couldn't be poured to them and make them cholin, because after all they'd been used for the mizbeach. They were part of the structure of the mizbeach. So therefore they hid them away in this room, I guess, until they could figure out what to do with them. So the room may have had multiple purposes. They could have used that same room where they kept these stones, could also be the one where they had the fire, or it could also be the one where Yochanan had his office for the chaisam. It's fine, that's not a problem. But and then the last one, Sfonis Marobis, Bo Yodin, Lebes Atvila, the northwestern one, the Kohen would go down to the mikveh if he became Tomei. So the point is, so fine. So the fact that two of them are described differently than in Talmud is not a big deal. Some of these rooms might have had multiple purposes. The one where they kept the stones could have also been used for something else. The one that they went down to Beis HaTfila could have also been used for something else. But the problem is that the Mishnah in Talmud describes that the Lishkas HaTloyim was in the northwestern corner, and the Mishnah in Midas describes that it was in the southwestern corner. So how do we understand those two? So there's the answer is going to be, again, like in the previous sugya, that the Mishnayos and Midas are according to a particular Tana, whereas the ones in Talmud are according to a different Tana. And then we're going to go in and discuss that detail tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.